Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'm joined, as ever, by an outstanding cast of characters to explore various parts of what I think of as the battle space of the war for the free world. And one of our most important areas of that battle space is what I think of as our front yard, Latin America. And our duty guy on that is Roger Noriega, former U.S. representative of the Organization of American States and Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. Roger, welcome back. It's been about a week now since the Summit of the Americas concluded with a blaze of inglory, I guess you might say, for the U.S. Secret Service and some military personnel. What else happened there or didn't happen that should have?
Well, you know, sometimes these the American press focuses on scandals like the Secret Service thing, and we all lament that they didn't pay attention to the important work being done by the diplomats, but that did not happen in this case. President Obama arrived to be greeted by Latin Americans who wanted to talk about Cuba's inclusion in the summit, Cuban dictatorship. It shows how really debased the region is, and the lack of commitment to democracy or even solidarity with Cubans who are living under that dictatorship. So it speaks volumes that these folks don't see any value in talking to the United States about trade or security or important issues like that. We still represent 90% of the region's economy, but they want to spend their time talking about decriminalizing drugs instead of opening up that market.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that, Roger, if we can. I guess, first of all, the point is that you have people who are deeply sympathetic to Castro, who are now in power in a lot of Western Hemisphere nations. You also seemingly have people who are seeing increasingly this idea of simply legalizing narcotics as a way to, if not end, at least bring under control the yawning problems that are occurring both on the other side of the border and on ours as a result of the drug trade at the moment. Give us a sense, if you can, Roger Noriega, as to how Barack Obama actually comes down on these two points. His sympathies, if not exactly for the Castro brothers, at least for sort of getting on with the business of normalizing relations with Cuba and legalizing drugs.
Well, surprisingly, Frank, and it sort of surprised me, the president took a rather kind of an orthodox approach on both of those issues. He didn't take the bait and said we wouldn't talk about Cuba coming in until it's a democracy. And even on decriminalization, he said that wasn't a viable alternative. But here's the important thing. We have to have allies if we're going to fight drugs in the region and where they're produced or transited. And our allies are in rebellion. Key important leaders, not the least of which Juan Manuel Santos in Colombia, sort of talking about this idea, and a good number of others. And
this is the drug legalization idea.
Exactly. That's some sort of move in that direction. And that's because, you know, they feel abandoned by us. And feel that because we're the consumer country, the biggest consumer country, certainly by no means the only, Brazil does too, but they feel abandoned by the United States. And so they figure, you know, if we're going to pay this cost, we should at least talk about how do we mitigate the damage. I think it's a disastrous approach, but we're going to have to open some sort of serious dialogue on that. And the president was unable to utter any useful sentences on the subject.
Yeah. Roger Noriega is our guest. He was, of course, a senior official in both the National Security Council and the State Department, as well as the Organization of American States. This is an area of the world you know well. Roger, you've written again of late of your concerns about the lack of planning or preparations to contend with the likely emergence of a narco state in Venezuela when Hugo Chavez passes from the scene. Was that a subject of conversation at the Western Hemisphere Summit, or is anything else going on along the lines that you think is required?
You know, not publicly at all. And as a matter of fact, the only thing publicly that the president said about the subject was that Venezuela didn't represent the threat to the United States, which is bewildering, has to be, to any of the neighbors that are paying attention to what's going on in Venezuela.
Or anyone with a lick of sense, for that matter, in or out of the region. Right.
Exactly right. And I think I have to change my approach on this, saying that a narco state will emerge, because we now have one of the narco judges who abandoned Venezuela about 4 weeks ago, who's turned up in the United States, who's prepared to implicate Chavez and all of his narco generals in narco trafficking.
Wow.
And so I think the narco state exists now,
yeah.
And even under Chavez. And that sort of lawless regime cannot hold together. It's not sustainable, in my view, after Chavez dies, and it looks like that's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I wonder whether the Obama administration will see fit to send this judge back rather than have him spill the beans on Hugo Chavez and what his generals are up to. Roger, let me turn to Mexico. There's obviously a very important election taking place there, as well as on this side of the border this year. We've talked in the past about the presumptive favorite, the PRI candidate. Have there been some perceptible shifts, or are they real, for that matter, on his part with respect to the necessity of maintaining the pressure on these drug traffickers? Or is he part of this this growing sentiment that we just need to legalize it and be done with it?
Well, you know, what's interesting is in Mexico, in that context, only Vicente Fox has talked about, the former president has talked about decriminalizing drugs, and he was roundly criticized by all of the ruling parties. All of the three important parties.
Major parties, right.
Absolutely. And this fellow, Enrique Peña Nieto, of the Institutional Revolutionary Party, who has a 20-point lead in the polls and is perceived as the likely victory on July 1st, has had to sort of come up with real proposals, and he has really understood that they can't roll back and go back to the truces with the narco traffickers in the past. He's criticized Calderon's sort of frontal approach and using the military, but only slightly criticized it. I think he doesn't want to be perceived as soft on drugs, and I think it's because he has something to prove on that front, because there are a lot of rumors about whether he's has had some associations with narcos in the past.
But
I don't want to cast stones because I don't really have the evidence, but I think he needs to demonstrate to the Mexican people that he's going to continue to defend the rule of law against these narcos.
Right. And let me ask you this, Roger. We're going to almost out of time, but very quickly, there's talk that this pre-candidate is looking at beefing up the national police force as kind of a different, better way to contend with this violence than using the military with its sometimes heavy-handed or inadequately sensitive to human rights kind of approach. Do you think that a national police force can contend with the kind of firepower these guys now have? Some of them, Los Zetos, have come to mind, who have been actually trained by special forces of the United States to be pretty darn lethal. Is that really an option? And do you think this is kind of just posturing for the election and that he'll wind up having to use the military in the end, just like his predecessor?
Well, this is always a tough issue because militaries aren't really meant to patrol streets and do police work. But and people accuse, Calderon and even that for that matter, Uribe in Colombia in the past as militarizing police work. What do you do when criminals militarize crime?
Right.
With
immense firepower.
What happened in Colombia was that the police were utterly overwhelmed by the firepower, the automatic weapons, and and RPGs now are appearing in Mexico.
Rocket-propelled grenades, right?
You have to respond with force in a serious way. It's correct that everybody wants to get to a place where this crime, this violence is manageable by a police force. But until that happens, you've got to be prepared to confront them, confront the firepower that they have and arm the military and give them the mobility they need.
And we better be standing with them and doing that, because it'll be on our side of the border in much bigger ways in the future if we don't. We have to let it go with that. Roger Noriega, thank you for joining us. This update is most appreciated, as are them all. Please come back to us again soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Senator Rand Paul about what he thinks is happening in Egypt, and much, much more, straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying they're serious about really cutting the budget.
As a backdrop
to this debate about 2011, people make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined, I'm very pleased to say, by Senator Rand Paul. He is a new member of the United States Senate representing Kentucky, a physician by training, perhaps as well known as anything for being the son of a famous father at the moment, Congressman Ron Paul of Texas, a presidential candidate. But he has emerged in his own right as a forceful exponent of, I'd say, libertarian thinking in the United States Senate. And we find areas of interest and overlap on a number of different scores, and it's a pleasure to have you with us, Senator. Thank you very much for taking a few minutes to join us.
Thank you, Frank. Glad to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about something that I know you have been, well, seized with, shall we say, and trying to ensure that your colleagues are as well, namely the idea of foreign aid to an Egypt that is increasingly under the thrall, under the control at least, of the Muslim Brotherhood. You mounted a filibuster that unfortunately did not succeed. There were some conditions attached to the law that authorized the funds. Hillary Clinton has waived them. Where are we now, as you see it, with respect to that aid?
You know, I've been concerned about overall foreign aid for quite a while, but I became very concerned about Egypt's foreign aid back in December when I heard that we had pro-democracy workers over there that were arrested and were going to be prosecuted and were being prevented from leaving the country, basically being detained in Egypt. And so I introduced an amendment back in the spring that said, if Egypt does not release our citizens within 30 days, that we will not give them their $1.5 to $2 billion in foreign aid we give them. And that combined with, I think, a trip to Egypt by Senators McCain and Graham, I think the combination of those two events did help to get our citizens released. Unfortunately, the way Egypt
did the payment of something like $4 million in ransom,
yeah.
I think.
It was a bit insulting the way it happened. We basically had to pay ransom. They called it bail, but it was about $4 million. It was $300,000 per person, and all of our American citizens had to sign a statement saying they would return.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of months later, then, Secretary Clinton releases their aid. Now, I did write a letter with Michelle Bachmann to Secretary Clinton asking her not to do it because there was still evidence that Egypt wanted to continue to prosecute these American citizens and have them return. But most people said, well, they're in America, they'll never go back. But then the next week, we find out after they get their aid, this is the way they treat us. They say they ask Interpol, the International Police Agency, to have international warrants to come and arrest them, basically, and extradite them and take them back to Egypt for a trial. And this, you know, greatly concerns me. I think it's unlikely that even this administration would let that happen. But as you've pointed out in some of your articles, that Interpol has been given diplomatic immunity here. Interpol has also extradited religious people who are accused of religious crimes from other countries.
Mm-hmm. This business about the executive order that the president issued concerning Interpol is, again, a place where we have, I think, very, very much the same concerns. Do you believe, Senator Rand Paul, that we are looking at a president who is disposed, at least in principle, to having this kind of extra constitutional role played by Interpol that perhaps in this case, perhaps in some others, might result in American citizens not being allowed to have the protections that the Constitution affords them from, you know, unreasonable search and seizure, among other things?
Yeah, I think this president has very little regard for the rule of law or for the Constitution. And another good example is about 2 weeks ago, Secretary Panetta was before a Senate committee and talking to Senator Sessions, and he was talking about possible war with Syria or with Iran, and his point was that he would get UN approval. And Senator Sessions looked a little bit concerned, and then he said, well, we might ask NATO's permission. And Senator Sessions said, aren't you leaving someone out? And he said, well, we might tell Congress what we're going to do. But nowhere in it was the understanding that the Constitution says the legislature is a vital part of the decision to go to war. And so I think this president really thinks that he makes all of the decisions without Congress, and that he's more beholden to international institutions like the UN than he is to Congress.
Yeah. This brings me to the next question I wanted to visit with you about. Senator Rand Paul is our guest of Kentucky. The subordination of American sovereignty to this international order, or worse, the effort to build that international order, to give it more and more power, more and more strength and institutional, you know, sort of infrastructure, seems at the heart of a treaty that has been kicking around for a long time. Ronald Reagan rejected it. Bill Clinton resuscitated it. George W. Bush said he would like to get it ratified. Barack Obama is apparently now prepared with your colleague, Senator John Kerry of the Foreign Relations Committee, to try to really push it through this year. And that's the Law of the Sea Treaty. And I don't know if you've studied up on it yet or not yet, Senator, but I just wonder what your thoughts are about the advisability of us getting into still more of this kind of transnational claptrap.
Well, it concerns me, and my understanding is that it would set up a tribunal underneath the aegis of the United Nations, mm-hmm. and that basically our soldiers or our sailors could be accused of crimes and taken before an international body. Now, we've always said that our soldiers don't go before our international body, so that's very concerning to me. And I think that really the idea of justice, we have a great constitutional basis for a system, jury trials and protections in our country, even for those who are, you know, have committed crimes, we give them a trial. And so that's very important to me, and I would not want to have either our soldiers or just even commercial sailors subject to international tribunals and not to American justice. So I'll be a strong opponent of the law of sea treating.
Well, I appreciate that enormously, and hope as this debate heats up, of course, that we might collaborate with you in expanding your levels of concerns about this, because quite apart from the tribunal, and you're absolutely right, it's a stacked deck against us, but there's a vision in this body, the tribunal and the sort of law of the sea infrastructure underneath it, the so-called International Seabed Authority, that their remit, as they say in diplomatic circles, actually extends to the interior of the United States, so as to regulate any air or waters that might flow into the international oceans that they are responsible for. This is really overreaching, and I know as you look hard at it, and Senator Mike Lee, your colleague who is sort of on point for the Republicans on this, you're going to find a lot of things to object to, and I look forward to collaborating with you on that. Matt, turn to one area in the closing couple of minutes we have with you, Senator Rand Paul, that we may not agree on as much. We've talked a little bit about declarations of war, and I agree with your dad on that. That's actually very important. We've talked a bit about Interpol and abuses of foreign aid. The defense budget of the United States is something that I think you've seen is necessary to cut, as well as other parts of defense spending, government spending. Do you think the roughly half a $1 trillion that has already been taken out of defense for the next 10 years is enough? Or should that next half a $1 trillion of sequestration also be excised?
Well, the way I look at it is in general budget terms, in general scope and responsibility of what the federal government should do. I think that the federal government, under our Constitution, under our heritage, and for all practical purpose, should be for the primary purpose up here is to provide for national defense. It's the number one priority of the federal government. And most of the other things we do up here shouldn't be done, period, or should be done at the state and local level. Mm-hmm. So if I were to have my druthers, the vast majority of the budget would be spent on defense. Interestingly, when we have proposed our budget, we have a five-year budget that balances in 5 years. We eliminate certain departments, like the Department of Education that Reagan was opposed to and many other conservatives. By doing so, we are actually able to have defense spending come in above the sequester. The current sequester under the Budget Act calls for like a 10% cut in defense spending in 1 year. I would like to avoid that. Under our budget, we allow defense spending to grow at a slow rate, but to grow over the 10-year period instead of having a reduction under the sequester. However, if it's just a question of removing the sequester so we don't get the defense cuts, I won't vote for that unless there's some kind of matching cuts elsewhere in the budget that would offset that, because I think, you know, I agree with Admiral Mullen that the number one threat to our national security right now is our debt, and even military spending, we have to look at it. But I'm willing to prioritize military spending if people are willing to cut the money from somewhere else in the budget.
This is a very important point on which to end this conversation and hopefully to begin the next. Senator Rand Paul, thank you for taking a little bit of time with us. We appreciate the work you're doing and the leadership on some of these really important issues, and we look forward to working with you on ensuring that the first job of government, which I agree with you, is providing for the common defense, gets attended to. Next up,
Janice
Kephart joins us to talk a bit about immigration policy, where we're going. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. One of the most important challenges we face as a free people is understanding the true nature of and threat posed by a totalitarian supremacist Islamic doctrine its adherents call Sharia. So it would seem to be good news that a $3 million public education campaign is being launched nationwide in order to clarify what Sharia is. Unless, that is, the group conducting such a campaign is the Islamic Circle of North America, a front for the Muslim Brotherhood. As we're seeing in Egypt at the moment, the Brotherhood is fully prepared to lie about its repressive agenda until it's too late for its opponents to resist. Under Sharia, that's called taqiyya, dissembling for the faith, and it's not only allowed, it's obligatory. We need the truth about Sharia, not taqiyya. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted, and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Janice Kephart. I'm very pleased to have her with us. She is not only one of the really credentialed experts on international border security issues, most especially ours, of course, and what you can do about it, including identity security as a key component. She was drawn on for these sources of expertise by the 9/11 Commission, was a key author of the staff monograph that accompanied the Commission's report, 9/11 and Terrorist Travel. And she is currently contributing mightily to all of our understanding of these issues through the Center for Immigration Studies, one of my favorite institutions here in Washington, and most recently, I'm very pleased to say, as a radio show host in her own right. Homeland Security Show is the title of it, and it appears at VIPInternetRadio.com every Monday night at 7. Congratulations, Janice, and welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much. It's exciting. Things are moving along, and I'm excited to be able to talk about a wide range of homeland security issues on my show as well. So,
yeah, unfortunately, there's a lot to talk about, isn't there? Yeah, let's jump right into it. You've been focusing mightily, I know, on these identity security mm-hmm. issues, and one of the things that I think you helped bring to light and to hopefully corrective action is that the Transportation Security Administration was really not doing a rigorous job of checking IDs. Tell us about that, and what are the implications if they are not doing that?
Well, yeah, it's a great story that I got to be part of that you can find at thedaily.com. Josh Bernstein was the reporter on it. And basically, you know, that little, when you go through the TSA security line, everybody knows you provide your boarding pass and your ID, whether it's your passport or your driver's license.
Some photo ID.
Government-issued photo ID. And
right.
So what are they doing with that? Everybody knows you got that little blue light, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is that doing? Nothing. It is pure sham. It's just show. All it's doing is giving light to the security guy to note that your boarding pass name is the same as the name on the identity that you provide, the identity card you provide.
So there's not some secret code that's in the passports or in the driver's licenses
that the blue light is bringing up? There is, but they don't check it. So
wow.
Basically what the counterfeits that are available from China now, where you provide all your identity information to who knows who in China, who is getting your identity information, they in return for a couple $100 will send you an extremely good counterfeit with all the holograms and security features that are now being produced in real ID driver's licenses, and that will get you through easily the TSA security checkpoint. So if for whatever reason you want to hide your identity, you just need to make sure that when you make your reservation for your airline reservation, it is the same information that is on the identity that you plan to use. That is all that you need to do right now, because TSA is not verifying that that identity card was issued to you by a legitimate agency.
Now,
so
Janice Kephart, what would be involved in doing that? Would this immensely add to the length of times that you have to wait in those security lines?
It's extremely easy, Frank. All you got to do is use the technology that's now being used at defense bases, at national mints that print our money. It's just a simple swipe, and within 2 seconds, it comes back to say whether that driver's license was actually issued to you or not.
Mm.
That simple swipe, that is something the counterfeiters cannot replicate, and that is the only way to verify that. And TSA is about to institute, they're piloting right now, scanning your card, but all it's going to check for is security features. Well, those security features are already being counterfeited by the Chinese.
That's a kind of unfriendly thing for the Chinese to be doing. Are they getting away with this on the grounds that, well, they don't know who's involved, and it's just these the same people presumably hacking into our networks and computers?
Here we don't know who is behind these counterfeiting schemes. We don't know if it's some form of Chinese entrepreneurship,
mm-hmm.
or if it's some form of the Chinese government,
mm-hmm.
we don't know. But
for Americans,
and so for college, a lot of those who are attracted to this are, of course, college kids. So you know, they need to understand they are giving their identity away,
yeah.
and their email addresses away to those who we have no idea who they are, and their identity could be stolen, counterfeited, resold in any way. It could also be used potentially for cybersecurity breaches. So we don't know what we're doing.
Other kinds of warfare against this country.
Absolutely,
the Chinese are not friendly, as you know, Janice Kephart. Let me ask you this, Janice. There is, in particular, a concern I know you've got about how some of the states are implementing the Real ID Act, and notably Massachusetts has come to your attention and therefore to ours recently. Tell us what's going on there in Massachusetts.
Right. Well, Massachusetts, I got a call from the Fox affiliate in Boston a number of weeks ago, and they have seen a surge in criminal activity from illegal aliens. And when the police go to bust these illegal aliens, they have legitimately issued Massachusetts driver's license and IDs. And they couldn't figure out why, number one, all of a sudden there's this surge in illegal alien criminal activity in their state. And number two, how, if you're illegally in the country, are you getting a driver's license? They thought that was against the law. Well, they're right. It is against the law. If you want to be a real ID compliant state and have your IDs be able to be used at the airport to get through security, you have to comply as a state with the real ID law and your issuing standards. Well, one of the main standards is you have to assure legal status in the United States. If you're not assuring legal status in the United States by simply checking with the federal government to make sure that that person is legally in the U.S., if you're not doing that in a state, then you're not compliant with the Real ID Act. So Massachusetts right now, only 5 states in the country are not checking legal status now. Before 9/11, nobody was. About 2005, maybe half the states were. States have found it's extremely valuable to check legal status because it keeps a large criminal element out of their state.
Yeah.
So the states that are not checking have become magnets,
right,
because those are the easiest places
That's
to get
That's just what I was
going to
ask. And right. Why would they want to be a magnet for this kind of illegal activity?
They don't want to, it's the old thing, they don't want to comply with the federal standards of the Real ID Act.
I see.
There is also the other problem that this administration promised a repeal of the Real ID Act. And some of the states are still holding out some strange hope that that's going to happen, even though that was Secretary Napolitano was 100% defeated on that.
Right.
The Real ID law stands. They have to come into compliance by next January, or their residents are going to stop being able to use their driver's license to board planes.
Yeah.
So it's very problematic.
Can't happen too soon for me. Janice Kephart, you were one of the very important influences on getting that law enacted, and I commend you for it, and I think it's tremendously important that all of these folks be implementing it faithfully. Let me ask you in closing, you've expressed a lot of frustration, and rightly so, about this administration, also about the borders. What's the latest on that involving the National Guard?
Well, the National Guard, the latest news is they're pulling all the National Guard off of the border.
What?
Claiming that it's a militarization of the border and Mexico doesn't like it, so we should do it. Furthermore, they say there's low morale
among
the Guard.
This is the administration that's doing this, or these are
the
governors that are involved with commanding the Guard?
It's the administration. No, the governors wanted the Guard there. No, it's the administration is doing it, saying that, number one, Mexico doesn't like it, and number two, the morale is really bad. Well, the morale is really bad because they wouldn't allow the troops to do anything.
Right.
They were allowed to look with binoculars, and they weren't allowed to help make any arrests. That is completely the opposite of what was going on with the Bush administration when there was a complete integration of the Guard with the Border Patrol. So, of course, they're frustrated at this point. So they've pulled them off, and now they're going to only have 300 troops, that's it, for the entire border, and they're going to be running helicopters, which is something that the Border Patrol already does. So I guess it's helpful if they're augmenting a need if perhaps the helicopters are not in good shape anymore. I don't know that particular piece of it. However,
but it's not the same thing as having the boots
thing
on the ground.
Right.
And Janice, we've got to let you go. You know the vicissitudes of time because you are now a talk radio show host in your own right. VIPinternetradio.com.
Ain't
fun, but it's got to be done. Make those times work. Janice Kephart, thank you so much for joining us and for this update. I hope you come back soon. And the splendid work that you and the Center for Immigration Studies are doing is more needed than ever right now. Keep the heat on those folks in the Bay State. Keep coming back to us and obviously to your own audience to keep us apprised of what's being done that leaves all of us at greater risk. When they're a magnet, we're a magnet. Janice Kephart, thanks. We'll be talking with you again soon. Noni Darwish up next, talking about the devil you don't know, but she does. Straight ahead.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and
listen. I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC, New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need, and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom, it's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We are in for a real treat in this segment. We have with us one of my most admired, most courageous friends. Her name is Noni Darwish. She is a refugee from Islam and has done as much as anybody alive, I think, to help inform us about the perils that Sharia represents, not just to Muslims and women like her who were brought up in her native Egypt under varying degrees of its oppression, but also the rest of us who the Islamists wish to force to submit to Sharia. She is the author of now three extraordinary books, really required reading in their respective areas. The first now, They Call Me Infidel, Why I Renounced Jihad for America, Israel, and the War on Terror. The second was Cruel and Usual Punishment, The Terrifying Global Implications of Islamic Law, or Sharia. And most recently, just this month, in fact, The Devil You Don't Know. Noni Darwish is now the director of Former Muslims United, a remarkable organization bringing together people who, like her, have become what they call apostates under Islam, and therefore are subject to the death penalty at the hands of those who adhere to Sharia. And for all these reasons, Noni, I can't think of anybody I would rather be talking to about what is going on now in your home country of Egypt and what it means for the rest of us. So welcome back. We're glad to have you with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Frank. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about the new book, The Devil You Don't Know, and the Arab Spring, which I guess is the sort of main focus of it.
Western media have expressed their joy about the Arab Spring. A lot of people believe that this is the day where the Middle East is going to change, they're going to enjoy freedom and democracy. And I looked carefully at Tahrir Square, reading every sign, but I couldn't see, Frank, any sign that says separation of mosque and state. I couldn't see any sign that says beating a woman is not a man's legal right. All the signs, Frank, were about Mubarak must go. He's a dictator. That's all. But I know, having lived for 30 years in the Middle East, that the problems of the Middle East and the political system there is far deeper than just taking out a dictator. And I decided to write this book and to really uncover this cycle. It's a permanent cycle that exists in the Muslim world, in almost every country. And this cycle it starts with dictatorships, tyranny, oppression, the pressure cooker over the people, and finally it ends with a revolution. Then there is a short period of honeymoon with the new leader, a lot of hope, again a disappointment, and a worse tyranny starts emerging, which ends with a disaster. The economy is a disaster, the political system is a dysfunctional, and it ends up with another revolution. Egypt had a revolution in 1952, that ended the Egyptian monarchy, and the Gamal Abdel Nasser, the leader of that revolution at that time, went to Tahrir Square, changed the name of the square from Ismailia Square to Tahrir Square. He changed the name of Egypt from Egypt to the United Arab Republic, removing the name of Egypt, the historical name of Egypt, from the name of the country. And he changed the flag, he changed the constitution, and it was a new dawn of freedom and democracy.
Yeah. Deja vu all over again. Noni, we're going to run out of time. Let's talk, though, a little bit about how this hope is being dashed at the moment. We have one of the rivals to the Muslim Brotherhood now in the presidential sweepstakes in Egypt warning us all that if the Brotherhood comes to power, you can forget about democracy. This is not a surprise to you, or for that matter, I think, to any of us who've been following these things, but it certainly seems as though it must be a surprise to the Obama administration. What are they getting wrong here?
Exactly. Their hacks in the media are all saying that the Muslim Brotherhood is a secular organization. I'm hearing things that are absolutely ridiculous.
The Director of National Intelligence, Noni Darwish, said that last year. It's not just the flacks in the press, it's the administration.
And they are stating openly that Sharia law should not be feared. They are dealing openly. Our government is going to send aid to them.
Has done $1.5 billion, no strings attached, lump sum payment.
Absolutely
outrageous.
A disgrace, because they are laughing all the way back home. They are talking what happens is the same people who come here talking about peace and democracy are the same people who are on national TV in Egypt in Arabic, telling them our number one enemy is America and Israel, and we're going to celebrate the Khilafah in Jerusalem, and Jerusalem is going to be our new capital.
Mm. So this is what I guess they would call taqiyya, lying for the faith, advancing your objectives at the expense of the infidel. This is presumably what you're trying to get at with your new book, Noni Darwish, of Former Muslims United, The Devil We Don't Know, namely that we are completely misapprehending what this Brotherhood operation and, for that matter, the other Islamists are up to. You've literally written the book about, of course, Sharia as well, cruel and usual punishment. What if you had the president's ear, for the moment, let's just say you do, what would you say to President Obama right now should be done by the United States vis-a-vis what has been set in train in the region and, for that matter, Noni Darwish, with respect to the Muslim Brotherhood here in the United States as well?
I doubt if President Obama would want to hear me. He already picked the people he wants to hear. And those are the people that he handpicked that would fit his agenda. I don't believe for a moment that President Obama is doing all of this out of ignorance. And all of the people in his administration who are saying the same thing, it can't be. After 10 years of information on Islam, after 9/11, saturating our country.
Yes. Let me just interrupt because we're almost out of time. One of the things that you've written about in your book is the penetration of the United States government. I've done so in a course that we'll be unveiling next week, by the way. One of the people that you focused on, as did I, is this gal, Dalia Mogahed. In a minute, just tell us who Dalia Mogahed is and why her involvement with the administration is such a problem.
Well, they handpicked her to become an advisor. She participated in writing the speech for Obama, for the
Muslim
Cairo.
Outreach speech. Yeah.
Her opinions that I know before even Obama became a president, because I watched her history and I kind of knew who she was before. And I was shocked as to how radical she was, how Muslim Brotherhood. She's very savvy. She's well-spoken. And they had picked her. And she's a Muslim Brotherhood.
We have to leave it at that.
Like
we're going to come back to you on this matter, believe me, soon. And I appreciate so much, again, your courage, what you stand for in terms of resisting this Sharia assault on our civil liberties, our freedoms, and our civilization. And thank you for doing so with such incredible tenacity as well as courage. Noni Darwish, author of The Devil You Don't Know. We will visit with you again soon, and we'll hopefully talk to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.